And I think anytime, I talk about this a lot, anytime you take yourself out of your comfort zone, scare the shit out of yourself, that is like when good stuff comes out of the other, out the other side. I think the important thing is just like listening to your gut, removing yourself from the situation and having the courage to see what's next.
Hi, my name is Mina Kim, your host of The Click Line. I've worked on Wall Street for over 14 years. Then I built out Orange Theory Fitnesses and sold them to a private equity firm. And upon that exit, started investing in women and minority startups, as well as advising women who are getting divorced with financial consulting and strategy.
Hey guys, you know what's the best way to get in touch with your friends? Sharing an episode of the Click Line podcast. So don't forget to like, subscribe, and share the episodes. And let me know what you think in the comments.
Welcome to the Click Line podcast. I am so excited today to have Leslie Tesler with us. Leslie spent more than a decade as a former L'Oreal marketing executive, then moved to Argentina, a country where she knew no one and didn't speak the language. A decade later, she found her husband in Argentina, became fluent in Spanish, raised three kids, and returned to the U.S. and thought, hey, I should launch a body care brand named Hani, which then went viral on TikTok, quickly picked up by Sephora in more than 300 doors. And we're so grateful she's here with us today. Welcome to the Click Line podcast, Leslie.
Thank you so much, Mita. I'm very happy to be here.
Yeah, we're so excited. Walk us through that moment in time in your career when you were an executive at L'Oreal and what drove your decision to go to Argentina.
Yeah, I think it's, and I think a lot of after the fact, speaking to a lot of friends, particularly a lot of women, kind of, I think, have this moment where you've been working towards something your whole life, right? And it's, I always thought when I was young, people say, what did you think? That's what I thought I was going to do. I like saw myself in a boardroom, in a fashion company, or this is what I always thought I wanted to do. And I think once you get on the hamster wheel, oftentimes it's hard to get off, right? It's, you know, promotions happen, more things are happening at work. And I think something that has always really served me well has been listening to my gut. And also realizing that it's okay to pivot and it's okay to say, you know what, this is what I thought I wanted, but it's not what I want anymore. And that's really what happened to me. You know, I had been dealing with a lot of anxiety and kind of burnout emotionally, you know, mentally. And then it started manifesting itself physically for me. And I just wasn't well. And I started, something shifted where I started looking at, you know, my boss's boss, who I always thought, that's what I want. That's what. And I realized, you know, I don't know if that's what I want. I don't know if this is worth it. I don't know if it's worth my health. And, you know,
right.
And I think that moment, that like physical manifestation of all of the stress, and it was really, I think, my body telling me, stop, listen to your gut. And yeah. And get out. Although I loved my time at L'Oreal, and it wasn't anything to do with the company, right? It was also New York, where I thought I'd live the rest of my life. But you know, it's like sometimes you change and you evolve, and I think a lot of people get stuck, and then 20 years later look back and think like, why am I still here? And you know, that's something I knew I wanted to avoid, even in my 20s. So I thought New York's not going anywhere. The beauty industry isn't going anywhere. What do I have to lose? And that was it. That was it. It was like, let's go.
Yeah, that is an amazing story. I think a lot of us go through career transitions and times in life where you're like, is this where I want to be? And I love that you listen to your gut, because I think, as we know, it's our second brain and it's important to listen to it. It knows, the body knows. And I love that you made that decision. And now there's going to be a huge influx of women going to Argentina.
It's so funny, because I always say that, like, you know, it doesn't have to be as dramatic. I decided to, you know, go to the other side of the world, which I now really believe was destiny. And that's where I was meant to be. But at the time, you know, I always encourage people, you know, I was very fortunate to be able to do that. I had saved up for, you know, kind of making this plan for a few years. But it also doesn't have to be that big of a move, right? I think anytime, I talk about this a lot, anytime you take yourself out of your comfort zone and kind of scare, can I curse on this podcast? Scare the shit out of yourself. That is like when good stuff comes out of the other side. So yeah, I think mine was a little bit, I've always had a flair for the dramatic. So I decided to take it to the other side of the world. But I think the important thing is just like listening to your gut and kind of removing yourself from the situation and having the courage to see what's next.
200%. Get comfortable in the uncomfortable.
Yes.
So earlier on then, how did you come up with the branding? Because, you know, one thing with Honey, man, your branding is just incredible. Your socials are amazing. I just love all the aesthetics on top of the brand itself being an amazing product. So how did you come up with that? And how did you know what product to focus on?
That's a great question. From a brand perspective, I mean, I was living in Buenos Aires when I had the idea for Honey, and it was literally me finding a random graphic designer in Argentina who is still with me to this day.
Nice.
And really like collaborating on what I've always had a very strong creative vision and known what I like and known what I don't like. And I think together we were able to bring that to life, but it's also seen so much evolution. I think the foundation has been very strong. But, you know, when I look at Honey, and even over the last few years, it has been, you know, in 2024, we went kind of viral on TikTok and people were calling us like, this is the lazy girl's favorite body care, because so many of our products are meant to be used on the go or to make it easier. And so we really doubled down on that. And it was like everything was lazy this, lazy that, the lazy body care. And, you know, and then I realized that that might not, while that's one piece of it, it kind of doesn't speak to how incredible the formulations are and the product actually is and the experience of using the product. And so 2025, you would even see, you know, from a visual perspective, I think we spent a lot of time elevating the brand and making it feel true to what, you know, the heart and soul of the brand is. And this year, it's continuing to elevate. We've really like built this whole Honey world that we want to bring to life. So I think having a really strong creative foundation as a brand and having all of the pieces, like the logo, for example, has never evolved. It's never changed. It's strong on its own. Colors have. Like we started with strong colors. The burgundy is our key and will always be like our foundation, but we're evolving the palette. And so I think it's kind of like similar to how I'll answer your second question about product is like, at a certain point, you have to listen to your gut, trust your vision and go and know that whether it's branding, whether it's product, the brand will evolve. Things will change. Things will evolve for the better. And I think as long as you have a foundation to ground to, it all comes back to that. And same thing with product, right? I don't know if you remember this, but when we launched, we were focused on shaving, right? We had this metal safety razor. And now 5 years in, shaving is a very small percent of what we're doing. And formulated body care is really where we're showing up and what our customers want to see from us. So, you know, our hero product, which wasn't our first product, but is definitely, I think, the thing we're best known for, is this one. It is the Splash Dab. And this is like,
yes, I love
one of
that.
Your favorites, right, Mina? This mm-hmm. is like a hair mask for your body. It's a intense moisturizer that you use in the shower while your skin is wet that actually creates a seal. Kind of, you can actually see it. You can see it bead up when you put it on mm-hmm. and the water sort of repel off of it, which for me is like the best ASMR. And yeah, it was built off of my own issue, which was I'd get out of the shower. I had three kids knocking on the door, like banging broom or already in the door. And then I didn't have any time for anything else. So while I had those, you know, 3 minutes in the shower, I could put it on. It would moisturize better than putting it on outside of the shower, and it would make my life easier. And at the end of the day, that's what we're trying to do, make products that are, you know, enjoyable to use, that work better than the typical body care products, and that are so easy to use that you'll actually use them. And I think Splash Up is a great example of that.
Yes. And it's incredible because you put it on, you rinse it off, you come out moisturizing and smelling like a goddess. And I love it. It's saved me so many times. And I'll say also the shave pillow has saved me a million and one times. Because the way that works is you don't have to hop back into the shower.
So,
and yeah, it is.
This actually answers your first question, which was, this was our first product. So this, well, shaving isn't a focus for as far as the razor is concerned. I think it was really important because this is how we came to market for the first time. So this was a product that was born from me running around my apartment, you know, realizing I wanted to wear a tank top, not being able to get back into the shower. And so, you know, Mina, like, what do? We either like splash soap and water.
Right.
And then it like drips all the way down. Every woman has been in that situation. Or you just take a razor and you go at it dry and like suffer the razor burn consequences after. And so this is really innovative in that, you know, it's a stick for dry shaving. You put it on your skin, you shave, and when you're done, you just rub it in and it locks in the moisture and you don't need access to water to be able to use it. And you're totally right. It saves so many people in a pinch. And what I was most surprised about is also how many stories that we hadn't thought of, you know, people who have mobility issues and find it difficult to shave in the shower, people who have small showers, dark showers, who just don't like shaving in the shower. I wasn't really anticipating so many people using it for like their main shaving, to shave all of their legs. Another like fun niche is bald men love this product. We have this whole like subculture with bald men.
I didn't think
because it's
that.
So moisturizing and they don't get nicked on their heads and they don't have to put anything on after. So yeah, it's cool to see how your, you know, intent for something, how customers take it and, you know, it grows and it could become something
right.
Totally different. So yeah, this is near
it's
and
just
dear.
Magical. And you know, I am an early investor, but this is one of the reasons why I invested, is because I invest in products and companies that I believe in and ones that I believe that I would use or relate to. And when I used the product, I was like, oh my God, it automatically moisturized. I don't have to go into the shower. And it smells fabulous. And it was just, I could see it being used by everyone on a daily basis. Also, it's K Granny approved,
which is not
Granny
easy.
Being
not
my Korean easy. Mother.
Honestly, one of the highest compliments I've ever received on the brand was becoming K Granny approved. It really it meant a lot. It meant a lot.
Yes, she had no notes, and for K Granny to have no notes on anything is fabulous. And so I've been trying all my life to have no notes, Leslie, and you just got it in like one swoop. It's just,
I'm so beyond.
One thing when, we're thinking about, you know, since you mentioned formulations and product testing. So when you think of a product and then you go to your chemist and then you go through product testing, I don't think people realize how much work and effort that is and, how you go through these multiple iterations. How many products have gone through like an iteration that actually don't even make it?
Mina, if you saw my shower right now, at a certain point, my husband's like, you gotta get rid of some of this. It is literally filled with lab samples, bars, liquids, literally everything you could imagine. And
yeah,
I think for us, that's something, because a lot of our products are first to market, right? They're not products. Usually the product dev process looks something like this. I've worked for so many different beauty brands, and it is, you know, you see a benchmark that you like, a moisturizer or whatever, and you think, oh, but I could do this better, right? I want to make it X percent less greasy, X percent. And you go to a contract manufacturer and they do that for you and the product comes to life. And that's, I think, a pretty typical and standard beauty product development process. For us, we are coming up with a lot of times things that don't exist in the market. And so we're trying to figure out how to solve a very, what we think is a broad problem, right? So I'll give you the example of Splash Off. This started you know, I have very, very dry skin, not just dry, but sensitive, highly reactive. I mean, scaly skin. People don't believe me because the skin on my face isn't like particularly dry, but scaly, ashy, dry skin. And several people had suggested that I try using coconut oil in the shower. I try using shea butter in the shower. And so I tried those. And what happened was it moisturized, but it left me so greasy. And so the dev process for Anne, my head of product, and I, it looks different every time. But in this particular case, I wanted to solve for that. I needed something that would lock in the moisture, that would moisturize me better, where my legs wouldn't be, you know, scaly 4 hours after I used it. And so we started playing around with all of these different super hydrators and how we could kind of, you know, we tried, you know, whipping it and we tried mixing it in different ways. And how could we get all of the hydration without the grease? And so when we go to our cosmetic chemist, very often we have a much more formulated idea. We say, this is what we want to do. Oftentimes we've already messed around with it in our home kitchens with, you know, to make sure we're on the right path. And then we pass off to a cosmetic chemist, our cosmetic chemist, when we need it refined and really brought to life from a you know, chemistry perspective. And so, oftentimes because our products don't exist, we'll start with the chemist and they'll say, look, this can't happen because of XYZ, right? There's a reason this product hasn't been made before, and then we'll have to pivot. Mm-hmm. And I think it's definitely a pain point for poor Anne, my head of product, because she's oftentimes like, look, I can't keep like, you know, these poor chemists, we're having them start things and then they don't come to fruition. I said, that's the cost of being an innovative brand. We have to test a lot and we have to try things. And, you know, sometimes they work, but I would say what you see is maybe 50% of what we're thinking in our head and what we're currently developing. Sometimes more, sometimes less. And, you know, right now I'm working on products for the second half of 2027 going into 2028, because the other thing it requires is a much longer dev calendar, right? Like this buffer for error, if you want to call it, testing, learning, pivoting, what it starts as is not what it becomes. You know, it's, to me, it's what makes it fun and it's what lets us bring these really kind of like new and interesting products to market. But from a development perspective, can be, you know, painstaking. And there's a reason why, you know, there's not a lot of us doing it, I think, because it's really hard. And there's a lot that for one reason or another just doesn't make it. And then you get to the point where you start doing compatibility testing and stability testing. And, you know, for our products that are approved by the National Eczema Association, all a whole load of different, you know, dermatological testing, clinical trial, all of the things that's once you already have your, you know, final ingredient list. And, you know, so it's a much more complex process, I think, than people probably realize, especially when you're trying to do something new.
Yeah. Amazing. And so when you got into the Sephora doors, did they approach you or was it this long application process that you went through to get approved?
We have a very unusual story. I always like to preface this because people are like, how did you get into Sephora? And this is so abnormal. Sephora reached out to us the week we launched Henny. And it was really... I would say Jenny, my CEO, and I were like, are we being pranked? Like, we had to like verify the email addresses. Like, we couldn't believe that this was happening. And so I think they have a very good eye for what's next and what's interesting, and they're great at spotting brands. But so we got in very early and unusually had them like reach out to us proactively. But I say this to a lot of other founders that I meet, you know, getting into Sephora or whatever your retailer of choice is just step one, right? Like, make sure you don't rush into it. I think we went in earlier than probably I would have if, you know, the things didn't work out the way they did, which I'm super thankful for. But I think if they hadn't, I would have built brand a little bit sooner, you know, made sure that when we launched, we had a really high brand awareness and a really well-established brand, because, you know, getting in is just one piece of the puzzle. And then you need people to know who you are on shelf, and you need a lot of money for inventory and support and marketing and all of the things. So while we did, I think, have an easier time than most getting in, I always like to caution that, you know, it, timing is so important when you go into pre-shell and making sure that you're going in at the right time.
Yeah.
And most of the times, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but most of the time, that's not early. That's not as soon as you launch. You'll waste a lot of money, and you know, there's no, once you get in, it's up to you to prove that you deserve to stay there. So I think people underestimate what that takes, and any retailer.
Yeah. And talking about money and fundraising, what are some challenges? Yeah. Your favorite topic, you know, for entrepreneurs out there who are thinking about starting or are in pre-seed, seed fundraising rounds, what are some, you know, challenges and tips, advice that you can give them that you faced early on?
I mean, I didn't expect, I think, fundraising to be such a huge part of what I do. I spend more than 50% of my job fundraising in many times of the year. And I think a couple of things. One, we've gotten to the point where, you know, we've raised $11 million to date. I'm not proud of it. I wish I was saying to you, we raised $2 million to date, right? It's like, I think the focus and the shift has really gotten to like raising being the prize. And not that I shouldn't say I'm not proud of it, but it's not the prize, right? The prize is being able to realistically get as far as you can get, having raised as little money as possible. That, and being realistic about how much it actually takes to get you to that next step. And so I would say, and I always say this to people who are just starting out, one, try to bootstrap for as long as you can, if it's possible. Try to. See how far you can get. The further along you can get bootstrapping, the better and easier it's going to be for you once you start raising institutional capital. Secondly, I would say you have to have an incredibly thick skin. You know, I think we've done a really good job raising and being able to hit our milestones and getting all the traction that we need to be able to, you know, continue. But man, it's hard out there. And you will hear a million and one people who don't necessarily know your space, don't know your product, give you a ton of advice and things you're doing wrong. And while I think it's important, you know, to hear kind of recurring themes, and it's always important to take constructive criticism, well, it's also really important to feel confident in what you're doing and not let the haters or the no's get you down, because it will be more no's than yeses. It is a numbers.
Right.
It is a numbers game. The money is out there. It's not about just finding the money. It's about finding the right money. And I know when you're early in, that seems like something people just say, but I cannot emphasize it enough. Really finding partners who believe in you, believe in the brand, will be there and support you in the good times and the bad, because it will not always be good. It will not always be, you know, up and to the right. And I think really making sure that you're picking the right people. I think oftentimes when you're just starting out, it feels like you're in the place of vulnerability, right? Because they have the power, you need the money, they have it. But I think really making sure that you're not compromising and that you're getting, you know, in bed, this is a marriage to a certain extent, to the right people is so incredibly important. So I would say go slow. Don't think that you have to raise all this money early on because everybody else is doing it and bragging about it on LinkedIn. You don't. So really, I think just, you know, try to put your blinders on, pick the right partners. Don't raise more than you need to. Maybe it's not raise, but don't raise more than you need to, because there will come a time most likely where you will need to raise. And I think it's important to have as much traction, proof of concept, especially now it's getting harder and harder, right? For pre-launch, pre-seeds, you know, the expectation is higher.
Yeah, good point. And so when you're talking to someone who's just starting out with the product and they're starting to tell you like their vision of what a product is, what are some of the things that you guide them are, like, what are like the top three topics that you're guiding them on?
I would say one is focus, being laser focused in who you are, what you do, what you don't do, And also from a product perspective, I think a lot of times, especially founders who have a lot of vision, they want to launch or and maybe this is a reason why they're raising money, right? They want to launch, you know, 8 SKUs at launch. And I would always encourage people to like find your hero and go deep and deep and deeper with your hero. It costs a lot less money. And once people are into one product, then they're more likely to buy two. You don't need to spend all this money on tons of inventory for a wide SKU range, even though you want to. And I know it's the full vision. Start with something small. And I think that's right. A really easy way to also avoid having to raise too much money. I also think the focus on, I guess focus would be the overall theme, right? Because it's also, I think a lot of times people start thinking about headcount and hiring too early. In the beginning, you're going to be doing a lot of it on your own. I think if you're looking for a co-founder, it is important to find someone who has complementary skills to you. Like my COO, Jenny, was my first hire, and she handles all ops, supply chain, logistics, the world that I knew nothing about. And it also isn't where my strengths lie. So I think, you know, when it comes to like who you need on your team, also put your blinders on. Just because everyone else has an influencer team of 10 people doesn't mean you need to do it that way. So be really right. clear about, you know, what you're offering, what you need in order to build it. And then the third would be, I think also is usually like fundraising, who to talk to, where to start. And I, you know, kind of spoke on that earlier, but really encouraging people to be creative and to wait as long as possible to raise. See how far you can get bootstrapped. I would have bootstrapped if we had gotten into Sephora so early. My plan was to try to bootstrap Henny for at least the first 12 to 18 months. And, you know, we're blessed that Sephora came to us so early, and that required a different level of inventory. And we really had to raise institutional capital at that time in order to have a successful launch. But if not, it wasn't on my radar.
Right.
Get really narrow and tight about what you're doing and get people to love it. And then it's a lot easier to raise and it's a lot easier to scale.
I love it. That is some golden gems for all of you entrepreneur founders out there right now. And so where can people find Henny right now?
So you can find us at your local Sephora. You can find us on our website, heyhenny.com. You can find us on Amazon. You can find us on TikTok Shop. And you can find us at Revolve.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And as you know, the name of my podcast is the Clickline Podcast. Yeah. So I ask every guest, when was there a moment in your personal, professional life that everything all of a sudden click for you?
I'm like, I think I'm still waiting for that to happen, Mina. This wasn't necessarily the click moment, because I do think something that I'm like working on is recognizing those moments more and celebrating those moments more and realizing what accomplishments they are. I think oftentimes I take those moments and I run too fast past them onto what's next. But something cool that I think, you know, was like a click moment and some cred with my kids that hadn't happened before is that last week we were walking through the park and someone came up to me and said, I'm so sorry, are you the founder of Henny? And I said, yeah, I am. No. And I looked at my daughter and her face went. And to me, that was a moment that, you know, and I had a really lovely conversation with her and was so happy that she loved the products and, you know, but I think for me, that moment of seeing my 12-year-old daughter have this like, wow, my mom's doing something and I'm recognizing it, because as a mom, right, so often I feel like I'm missing everything and the kids say, oh, we wish you were home for this and you were home for that. And so I think that moment was really special to me, not because someone recognized me on the street, but because it was a moment for me to share with my daughter where I think she realized, hey, it's pretty cool what my mom's building. And
amazing.
And that was a special thing for me.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And I have to tell you, I have used all the Henny products for fave things with my girlfriends, and people absolutely love it. And I happened to be at another event, and someone else told me and was freaking out because they also always gift every year fave things for with Henny products. So I will have to tell you, I think that is going to be a huge thing that continues to happen every season.
I hope so. But it was very cool. And I'm honestly just like so honored that people think of us for things like that to share with their friends. And, you know, I get a kick out of it. So it's really cool.
Look, I'm excited. I'm so proud of your journey and how successful you've been. And I can't wait to see the rest of your journey. And I'm really excited for all the new products coming into the pipeline. So thank you for being on. I'm so grateful for you and I appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you so much, Mina. This was so fun.
Don't forget to send in your questions and comments to the Click Line. And one more thing, the views and opinions expressed on this podcast are for informational and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered professional advice. Please consult with qualified professionals for advice related to your specific situation.